Welcome to the San Diego Psychological Association's podcast, Diving into Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Carcel. This podcast has been developed with the intent to inform and educate the general public and providers and should not be relied upon for any other purpose. The content, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and not those of the San Diego Psychological Association. I'm excited to introduce Dr. Devin Burkheiser, clinical psychologist working at San Diego State University and also in private practice. She received her undergraduate degree in psychology from Rutgers University and her doctorate degree from Alliant International University. She has over 10 years experience and co-hosts her own podcast at SDSU. Welcome, Dr. Burkheiser, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm really excited to discuss the college population with you because college students and students in general have had a very challenging time prior to and during this pandemic. What are some of the most common mental health issues that college students are dealing with right now?
I think probably anxiety and depression are always kind of top of the list. And I don't have statistics from our counseling center at San Diego State to kind of back that up, but it's just anecdotally the experience. And I think when you just think about that phase of life, it makes sense. You know, for so many students, it's the first time kind of being on their own, being away from home, being more independent, kind of figuring out the next stage of life and how to transition to that. And so it makes sense that that's a time of anxiety and uncertainty. And also for a lot of students, I think, you know, making new friends, establishing new relationships is hard. And so some isolation, loneliness, disconnection, uncertainty in that area, it was just kind of like a natural part of that phase of life and that developmental period.
Right. Yes. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned statistics. According to a national college survey completed by the American Psychological Association in 2013, prior to the pandemic, anxiety is the top presenting concern among college students, with 41.6% of students experiencing anxiety. This statistic is followed by depression at 36.4% and relationship problems at 35.8%. And these statistics are all prior to the pandemic. This is absolutely staggering. National Eating Disorders Association, NEDA, estimates that 10 to 20% of women and 4 to 10% of men in college suffer from an eating disorder, and rates are on the rise. I'm curious for you, how are students expressing themselves right now in the college atmosphere, and how are we communicating with them to support them during this hard time?
Yeah, I think those numbers, when you hear the statistics, are sort of staggering, right? It sounds really high, but it's not surprising to me in my work and in what I do, just seeing so many students reaching out for help, saying, you know, I'm feeling anxious all the time, I'm feeling depressed. And I think one of the kind of positives right now for college students is that for many students, mental health has kind of been destigmatized. And so I think more and more people are feeling comfortable about reaching out and getting that support and learning that they're not alone. And so that's really helpful. But there are some factors that I think come into play, certain cultural aspects, underrepresented populations that might feel less comfortable reaching out or might feel like people don't understand my experience. And so at the Counseling Center, we really try to not only be available to students, but to really reach out to and kind of get the word about mental health issues out on campus, doing presentations, letting students know that this is common. I don't want to say it's like normal, quote unquote, because that term is just to me so like kind of loaded and useless in a way. But just letting students know that uncertainty, discomfort, loneliness, those are part of the human experience. And those are things that we can talk about, and talking about it is helpful. There's options out there for support and connection, and letting them know that while these things are kind of part of this phase of life, you don't have to go through it alone, and you don't have to just kind of keep silent about it and continue to suffer.
And I think it's important, you brought up diverse populations, and I think it's important that we address students of these diverse backgrounds. You know, it's interesting too, kind of looking at the statistics here again. In 2016, the American College Health Association found out that a sample of more than 33,000 undergraduate students, 10% of them identified as LGBTQ and are really exploring their own individuality and sexuality. And also, we found from the American Council on Education that students of color make up now 45.2% of undergraduate programs and up to 32% of graduate programs. So we are seeing, you know, a diverse population like never before. This is something that is so significant and unfortunately is often underrepresented in counseling psychology centers and also just in general. So I'm curious, what are you seeing for this population? What is the support that they're receiving and what can they do to ask for their needs to be met?
Yeah, you're spot on, I think, with all of that. While the student body is getting more diverse, oftentimes faculty is not representative of that. And so teachers and professors that don't necessarily represent that or fully understand that perspective, and it's the same in counseling centers. And so obviously, I think everyone now is more aware of that and trying to make sure that as much as possible, the representation of faculty matches that of students, but we have some catching up to do with that. And in the meantime, you know, not only are students of color and students who identify as part of the LGBTQ plus community dealing with anxiety, depression, the things that everybody else is, but then there's also racism and bigotry and just kind of this added layer of complication. And so I think it's really important that as a white faculty member on campus, I feel like it's my obligation, it's my responsibility to make sure that I am looking at unconscious bias, kind of validating students' experiences when they're bringing them to me, even if I haven't had those experiences, to know that that is real and that exists and that we have to factor that in terms of the challenges that students are facing. You know, even simple things like when there are class discussions and lectures about race, if there's three Black students in a sea of hundreds of students, oftentimes they feel like, oh, they have to kind of represent that. And you know, that's an unfair pressure to put on students. And I think faculty need to be really aware of that. And we all, from an institutional level, from a societal level, need to kind of make sure that we're doing what we can to support those experiences of students.
I completely agree. And thank you so much for that. I really am encouraged by the hard work that people like yourself and, you know, faculty were really trying, I think, to make a difference. And it's important that students realize that too, that they're heard, that we're trying to do our best here, and that it is a learning curve and a growing curve. It's unfortunate that it's come so late in our history that we're actually doing the research that needed to be done, you know, centuries ago, to be candid, but now we're really doing our best to show this equality and give as much opportunity as possible. However, it's still a road. So I think it's important, just, you know, you and I talking a little bit about this, that students can feel like, you know, I can bring this up to my therapist, I can bring this up to my college and my psychologist, and that we are working hard to hear the needs of the diverse population of students, because it really is a growing population and it's always been important. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate you looking at it from your perspective. And myself as a woman of color, you know, it's my job also to not only focus on my background, but the background of others as well, and educate myself as much as possible. So it's on all of us, you know, it's on all of us to do this work. So I really appreciate that. You know, this year has been really hard. Just, you mentioned racism, you mentioned, you know, these different things. There's been political discord. It's been a really tough year. I'm curious, how has the pandemic added to this with the population of students? What have you seen with the pandemic and COVID-19?
Yeah, I think at first, just about a year ago now, from the time that we're recording this, there was just so much uncertainty, right? And nobody kind of knew. And it felt like week by week, the information is changing. And so I remember it was kind of, we were being told, okay, after spring break, classes will go virtual. And then that was moved up. And it's like, no, it's happening right away. And for some students, like, now you need to move off campus, you know? And so it just kind of felt like, what is happening? How do we make sense of this? And so early on, a lot of the work that I was doing with students is just validating the uncertainty and how that's causing a lot of anxiety, not just about our health, the health of our loved ones, students who had their own health issues or had parents or grandparents that were higher risk, but just kind of like, what will next week look like? Will I lose my job? Will I have a graduation ceremony? You know, all of these things that had been to some degree kind of taken for granted are now really uncertain. But I think even more than that, as we've all seen, the inequities have been exposed to a larger degree. And so some students are fortunate and are able to go home to a supportive family with the resources they need and a laptop and Wi-Fi and food. And other students didn't have that luxury and, you know, maybe had to go home to a space where they didn't have private space. So attending to classes was a lot more difficult. I've worked with students who on campus felt free to be themselves and live their identity, maybe as a trans student or an LGB student. And then at home didn't feel like they could do that because their family wasn't supportive. And so going then back to an environment that feels really unsafe, you know, and students that had financial issues and maybe had to work despite the fact that going out felt very risky, but they didn't have the luxury of staying home because they needed to support themselves or their families. And so I think that's been one of the challenges is trying to support students while recognizing that there are some serious inequities and we can offer some support, but we can't fix that as a society, you know? And so there are some students that are just going to be struggling more now from a mental health perspective, academically, and others that will be adjusting a little bit easier and doing a little bit better.
Yes, absolutely. Gosh, and it is really challenging, isn't it? Because this pandemic has brought about things like we hadn't even considered before. You know, a lot of times students were coming to school to be free of concerns, and they weren't necessarily ready to disclose certain things to their family members, or, you know, they're still, you know, even at school trying to figure out things and not being able to go home and have the support of their family. There's just so many different circumstances that, you know, the pandemic has really created such a challenge. So one of the things that I think it's important that you and I talk a little bit about today as well is what we have seen in recent research is, you know, from 2019 to 2020, around 36.9% of college and university students who have mental health concerns have actually considered suicide. And I think it's important that we address that. A lot of times suicide is one of those topics that is considered taboo and something, you know, that a lot of people try to shy away from. And I think it's really validating when I am able to talk to someone in my office or just, you know, in a personal space where they're heard and that we explain that suicidality a lot of times is really just a tremendous amount of emotional pain and mental health concerns that have not been addressed, and that practitioners are here to support, you know, students who are facing this. 36.9% is a staggering number. It is way too high. And I'm curious, what resources or what do you suggest we do as a community to support students who are struggling with high risk concerns?
Yeah, I think the suicide issue is obviously a really important one. And, you know, I've heard kind of anecdotally too about an increase in suicide and suicidal thinking in this pandemic. And I think when we just sort of think about that, it makes sense, right? Because people are feeling more isolated and lonely and disconnected. And if seeing people in person was one of the things that kind of kept you feeling connected and engaged and happy, and that's taken away from you, yes, there are virtual ways to connect. But I think for a lot of people, it doesn't feel the same. It doesn't have the same impact. And so it makes sense that people now more than ever are feeling just really lonely. And that can kind of lead to desperation when it's persistent and ongoing, as it has been now for us. To me, the most important thing is just destigmatizing, letting people know that it is okay to talk about that. letting kind of lay people that aren't in our field know that asking about that, talking about that with somebody is not going to cause them to take action, but will so often help them feel relieved that they have a space where they can kind of get it off their chest. And so we've tried to do a lot of work on campus, not just to have the counseling center be a place to go, but to train up student leaders, other faculty members in different departments to be aware of this. If you have concern about a student, reach out. If you need guidance on how to approach that student, call us at the counseling center and we'll walk you through how you might do that. Just, you know, kind of letting students know that this is something that happens, that it's okay to talk about it, that help is available, and that we want to be there and to sort of support you. And I think for people too, if you're not in this field, it can be scary. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't know what to say. And you don't have to be perfect, but just letting this person know, I'm here. If you want to talk, I'm open. I'll help you figure out the resources. You don't have to go through this alone. I can kind of be your partner in this is really helpful.
Yes, I completely agree. And you know, I think I like what you said when you're talking about destigmatization. You know, we are working very hard to destigmatize basically all of these diagnoses and mental health concerns, and realizing that, you know, mental health is really so connected to physical health. There is a connection. Mind and body is really a thing. And, you know, suicidality and self-harm is often maladaptive coping, things that are just, you know, we all have some form of maladaptive coping. And, you know, because students are in a whirlwind of situations, it's important that we let them know that we do have the resources to help and that there are people out there that want to support and be here for you. So I hope for anyone who's listening that they know that they can reach out to their counseling centers, much like where you are at the universities or their colleges. There's suicide prevention hotlines. There's, you know, local and national support groups and, you know, people who are here willing to help. So I think it's just important to put a broad statement out there to let people know that they're not alone. So I'm really glad that, you know, you're sharing that information. You know, on that same note, you were mentioning earlier about families and support systems. I'm curious, you know, with the pandemic, with everything that we're discussing today, obviously these high statistics for college students, what can parents do to support their college kid?
When you were talking about self-harm as kind of coping, it got me thinking about the fact that, you know, I never, in my whole educational experience, up until probably grad school, never took a class on like how to cope with emotions, you know, and we sort of learn implicitly from our parents, our caregivers, our friends, our peers, the people that were around. But I don't think in most families, there aren't a lot of explicit conversations about how to deal with feelings, how to have these conversations that are difficult, you know, how to ask for help. It's sort of just implied and assumed. And one of the interesting things about working with college students is so much of it is helping them understand that, like, this is normal. You know, anxiety is something that we all experience. When I hear students say, I have anxiety, my thought is, we all do. That is a normal human emotion. And so, you know, I think families early on, for parents of young kids, it's helping them learn how to navigate these difficult situations, helping your children learn how to navigate disappointment, rejection, all of those things that if we learn how to do that from a younger age and growing up, then we're more prepared to kind of get into college and the real world and do some of those things a bit more independently. But once your kid is already there and they're a student, you know, I think listening is sort of the number one thing. I think a lot of students feel oftentimes like their parents might not understand, or they might kind of put pressure on them. And so just really being open-minded, listening to their experience, trying to not judge or kind of make assumptions, but just really hearing what they're going through and asking what they need and how to be a support, I think is a great place to start. I feel a lot of students too, that they feel so much pressure, like they can't make a mistake, you know? And so normalizing making mistakes. Who hasn't made a mistake when they were in their late teens or early 20s or 20s or 30s or 40s and beyond, right? Like we all do that. And I think so often now the message is that you shouldn't, that you should always kind of, you know, be doing the right thing and be achieving and think about the next goal. And if you don't do this right, then you won't have this meaningful career. And I just know that to not be true. And so allowing students to make mistakes, knowing that you'll be there, hopefully to kind of guide and support them through that, but not necessarily add punishment on top of it when they're already struggling.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, you know, because there is a theme of perfectionism that seems to echo across this population. And it's really important that we recognize, you know, that there are resources also out there for you as well, you know, for parents and for caregivers and for, you know, friends of someone who's struggling in college and, you know, reaching out to a local mental health provider, you know, perhaps maybe family therapy is warranted or, you know, individual therapy for the parents as well, because they're struggling with seeing their child suffer or maybe with their own concerns can be very beneficial. So there's a lot of avenues here that, you know, we're here to, again, support the community in that way. So I think that's a really good point. And, you know, as far as perfectionism, everybody makes mistakes. You know, there's just the reality where things have changed. And I think we can segue a little bit here into social media. You know, we see things now that we've not seen in previous generations, where it is quite disheartening. As fun as things are on social media, like Snapchat and all these different things, we're actually seeing research that show that, you know, young girls using some of these apps and some of these, you know, social media, and I don't want to particularly point out any specific one, you know, they are finding much lower self-esteem in young girls and young boys and, you know, non-binary children that we've never seen before. You know, these are not things that, you know, previous generations grew up with. So how do you talk to, you know, students and what advice or what could we be telling students who are really struggling with body image issues or that perfectionism, whether it is in academics or just themselves in general?
Yeah, this is a huge issue. And I think social media for sure has a role in it. You know, when you're in college, if you're in this sort of 18 to 22, 23 age range, it's still a point in life where you're really figuring out your identity and who you are. And I think when that's not fully formed yet, you're more susceptible to outside influences kind of skewing that. And so obviously what we see on social media is not a full accurate representation of what people's lives are really like, right? So they're maybe featuring their highlights, their best moments, their amazing vacations. There's also, of course, the issue of Photoshop and face tuning and all of these things. So the image that I'm seeing is not actually what that person looks like, but I don't always think about that or know that, right? And so what I see portrayed is really an unrealistic version of what life is like. But I think when you're not sure who you are yet and you're trying to figure that out, it can be really easy to look at that and think, oh, well, why aren't I that way? Why don't I look like that? Why aren't I doing those cool things? Why don't I have those experiences? And I'll say, I am a fully formed adult and I see images on social media and I notice like, this is not good for me, you know? And so I think it's even more so when you're still kind of early adulthood. So I just work with students trying to be realistic. For most of us, a complete abandonment of phones and social media is not an option. And we wouldn't maybe want that to be the case. As with everything, there's good and bad, you know? And so not necessarily throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but encouraging students to just be mindful and intentional and pay attention. Are you scrolling through this for hours on end? Does it feel like this is how you best want to spend your time? Are you noticing that it impacts your mood? Is it keeping you up at night? Is it causing more worry? If you feel like it's some of the costs are outweighing the benefits, then maybe let's look at how you might kind of limit it or be intentional about who you follow and what you're exposing yourself to. You know, I think there's a difference if you're seeing people on social media that you're connected to in real life and keeping up with them versus these sort of influencers who portray this perfect image, and letting students know, like, if you don't like following someone, you don't have to follow them. You don't have to expose yourself to these images. You're the consumer here and you get to choose. And so I try to just kind of take a realistic perspective, assuming that this will be part of your life to some degree, but helping students think about what they want that to look like and being thoughtful and noticing how it's impacting them and making changes if it feels like it's causing a lot of problems, because I think it has the potential to be really problematic.
I completely agree with you. And, you know, the statistics support that as well, that, you know, while social media, as you said, has benefits, we have to be mindful of the things that are causing or exacerbating more of the mental health concerns. So I think that's a great ongoing topic and issue to be discussing with college students and frankly, everyone. So it's good to hear that. I'm curious, you know, college students, we're bringing up a lot of the concerns that we have with them, a lot of the things that, you know, we see in this population, but there's also so much strength and resilience. And I'm curious what you see as far as those traits in college students.
Yeah, so many. I think that's why I love working with this population, because, you know, college students are just by definition in a place where they are learning so much. You know, they go to class and they're trying to figure out the material, but also who they are and what they want next and how to navigate relationships. It's just so much learning. And I think that they really bring that to therapy and to the mental health aspect. And so students come in so curious about not only who they are and why they react the way they do and wanting to understand themselves, but wanting to learn about emotions and relationships. And so it's just so fulfilling working with people that are so hungry and open and just kind of really wanting to take what we work on in therapy and kind of run with it. You know, I think I've been really amazed too by this generation of college students where there is so much less stigma. They are talking about things so much more openly. There's so much more of a focus on equity and compassion. And I love that and feel really hopeful for the future, because that's so much the part of the work that what they bring to our work together. And so knowing that if they're bringing that to our work, of course, they're bringing that into the world in other ways. I think I've been really kind of astounded, and the pandemic has made it even clearer. There were times at the beginning where I felt like I was really struggling to adapt to this new lifestyle. You know, it's like teaching an old dog new tricks. Like, I was set in my ways. When they said you have to do everything virtually, I thought, I don't want to do telehealth. I don't want to work from home. But the students were just rolling with it. It was an inspiration to me, like, oh, I should be more like that, you know? And even I remember working last spring with students in a group, and they were all seniors, all facing graduation. And I said, I feel awful that you're not going to have this experience of a traditional graduation ceremony. You've worked so hard for this. And they were all like, it's okay. You know, I'm going to celebrate with my family. I'm going to do this. Like, yeah, it's not ideal, but like kind of putting a positive spin on it. And I thought, oh my gosh, like I could really learn a lot from this ability to adapt, to be flexible, to roll with the punches. And I've seen that just time and time again from all of the students that I've been working with in this pandemic. And I think we can all really learn a lot from that. You know, sometimes the longer you do things, the more stuck in your ways you get, and it's hard to see other things. But the nice thing about college students is they're so open to exploring and learning that it's easier for them to see these other opportunities and these other paths.
Yes, I completely agree. It's actually very refreshing sometimes to just sit with, you know, a college student and kind of get the perspective of, you know, equity and, you know, really learning to be woke. You know, that's something that I find just wonderful. I know I'm aging myself a little bit here, but that's okay, because it is important. You know, this is a generation that has experienced a transition that previous generations did not have, again, from, you know, this social media platform and all of these changes that are very positive. I know we're talking earlier about social media. And again, one of the benefits is you do get exposure to a diverse world. it's not limited based on your geographical location anymore. So that offers a beautiful stepping stone. Plus, there's opportunity, to use tech in the form of research. And of course, we have to caution that some research is not founded and are things that are more opinions, but, you know, students are also savvy to that as well. They're able to look online and they go, okay, you know, this is really coming from a source that is supported by research versus a source that's not. So we're actually learning a lot from them as they're learning from us. So I think it's just kind of wonderful to experience that as well. One last thing, I'm curious, again, for college students, there's just so much on that we could talk about on this topic of mental health. Is there anything that you'd like to add, anything that we didn't cover today that would be important based on your experience?
And I think we covered a lot of good stuff. I think the things that I would emphasize, and this is true not only of college students, but everybody, that you're not alone in anything that you're struggling with, and that there is real value to seeking support and reaching out and talking about it. And there are always resources available. Certainly that's true on college campuses. More and more, I think campuses are putting an emphasis on mental health and making sure that students know how to get connected. But that's true of the larger world in general. One of the things that you said really kind of struck me about this kind of generation. And I think I was always sort of taught, or the message I got when I was being raised, is that, the world is tough and you have to kind of be tough and figure out how to survive. And I think now this generation of college students is kind of like, well, why? Like, why can't the world actually be better and be more supportive of us and be healthier? And that's really what they're working toward. And I think that's going to serve all of us. You know, the idea that I don't just have to assume that the world is going to beat me down and I better be tough, but instead I can be vulnerable and I can be authentic and I can actually work toward a better world that's more supportive of everybody and all these different voices and all these different opinions and all these ways of living. I think that doesn't have to feel threatening. I think we will all benefit from that. And so just to kind of emphasize that I'm really hopeful about the future because I get the opportunity every day to work with these students that are smart and interested and empathic and compassionate and incredibly resilient.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you so much for that. And for anyone listening, I think it's really important that you know that you do have support on the local level and national level. For anyone who needs help right now, you can contact the crisis line at 800-273-8255. Again, that's 800-273-TALK. And someone can connect with you and help you with resources in your local community. Dr. Burkheiser, thank you so much for being on the show. I'd like a quick question in regards to how people can contact you. Where can people find you individually?
So the easiest way is via email. And my last name is sort of a mouthful, so I'll spell it out. It's Devon, D-E-V-O-N, period, Burkheiser, B-E-R-K-H-E-I-S-E-R, @gmail.com. That's the best way to reach me. And you know, I'm always happy to field any questions too, or sometimes it's just kind of helping people find the right connection and the right next steps. And so I'm more than happy to help, whether it's college students or parents or just general community members that are interested in anything that we've talked about today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Burkheiser. Really appreciate you coming on the show, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. The information and advice offered is not intended to treat or diagnose and is not meant to replace any other professional consultation. If you'd like to know more about the San Diego Psychological Association, go to our website at sdpsych.org. That's sdpsych.org. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, take care of yourself and be well.